Welcome to another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. Who is Amy Marks? Well, she's a woman of many talents. Actress, playwright, voiceover artist, professor, and ordained interfaith minister, spiritual counselor. She's also the writer and star of her critically acclaimed one-woman show, Nice Tits, in which she shares life as a breast cancer patient and survivor. I was fortunate to see the show, which is raw, brutally honest, and absolutely hilarious. We're going to talk more about that in a minute. Amy's appeared in regional theater. Some of her favorite roles include Gorgeous in The Sisters Rosenzweig, Myrtle in Kingdom of Earth, and Lucille in Gemini. She's also performed at Manhattan's Upright Citizens Brigade. Screen work includes the indie film The Waiting Game. She was the voice of Peg the Pig in the animated feature Impey's Island, which premiered at Manhattan's Tribeca Film Festival. And speaking of voice, Amy's has been heard on many TV promos and political campaigns. And last but not least, Amy teaches acting at the New York Conservatory for Dramatic Arts. Amy, welcome and thanks so much for joining me
today. Thanks so much for having me.
So when I said who is Amy Marks, I'm going to ask that question of you because I want to know if you've always been a performer.
Well, when I was a little girl, it's what I always wanted to do.
So you put on plays in the barn?
I did. There was no barn in like on Long Island, but I made my family crazy. I was like, the Jewish holidays, I was like, okay, everyone, time for me to entertain. So you only
singled out Jewish holidays?
I singled out Jewish holidays. Yes, I entertained
did you have like a Rosh Hashanah comedy act or
something? No, I wish I thought of that.
Well, it's never too late.
Hey, there you go. There's always this September.
And then obviously that got carried over to school, right? Where you would be in the school plays and things.
Yes.
And so was it a natural progression for you that when you got older, you were going to do something about it?
You know, originally when I went to college, I wasn't going to major in theater. I was going to be a teacher.
Okay.
Which is interesting because I ended up becoming an acting teacher. But I auditioned for the play there and I just loved it. And I remember calling my father saying, can I change my major? And he said, if it makes you happy, absolutely.
So did you go to a school that focused on the dramatic arts?
No, I went to Rider University, which had
in
New Jersey, mm-hmm. which had a really good theater department. It was small, which for me was really good because I got a lot of individual attention. And then when I moved to the city, I studied with some really top, terrific teachers.
And so then it was obviously a no-brainer for you that you were going to be a performer.
Correct.
How easy was that?
Not at all. Mm-hmm. No, it's very hard.
It's
like
it's terrible.
It's a really, you know, and I tell my students this too. If you're in it to be a celebrity, good luck, best of luck to you. I'm in it because I love the process and I love the art. And if I didn't feel that way, I would have left years ago because it's difficult. You struggle. There's months that you can't pay your bills. You don't know what's coming next. But it fills my soul in such a deep way that I don't know what else I'd want to do.
But often it can be out of one's control. You can love it and you audition and you don't get the role. And how do you bounce back up?
Well, you know, some jobs it's easier than others. And I think that, you know, you mentioned that I'm an interfaith minister. I think for me, meditation really helps. Wanting something and letting go of it, mm-hmm. you know, studying Buddhism helps with that. It's just everybody has to find their way to cope with it. I also think what helps me now a lot is that I have my own project, so I have control of it. And I tell my students this all the time. I really think it's about creating your own work and not waiting for someone to want you. Like, do it yourself. Just do it yourself.
Well, on some level, that's got to be easier said than done. You know, not everybody's got that in them, too, you know? So that kind of puts you off to the side somewhat. When you were first starting out, was there something, oh, I want to be a dramatic actress, or I'd like to do comedic roles, or it didn't matter to you?
It didn't matter. Mm-hmm. You know, you're 20 years old, you come to New York, you're like, I want to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very different time then. I mean, New York has changed and the business has changed so much. So I was in like a million showcases in basements, you know, where there's no heat. you know what I'm saying? Like mm-hmm. I really went through the paces. And then in my late 20s, I decided I wanted to focus on voiceovers for a while.
Which can be very lucrative and very steady.
Which was very steady and very lucrative. Mm-hmm. I was one of the lucky ones. The business has changed dramatically. I'm union, and now there's so much non-union work, so a lot of the jobs, it's just a very different market.
See, I thought you were going to go another route. I thought you were going to say that
now it's just all about super famous people.
Well, there's that too.
Let's get Matthew McConaughey driving a car or whatever, you know.
Right, so you have super famous people, then a tremendous amount of work has gone non-union. Mm. So the sliver's like this, and I'm in the running with the women I audition with. Any one of us could do the job.
When you got out of school and you started auditioning, I'm curious about this process. What's that like? In terms of finding an agent, does everyone have to do that? Did you do that?
I never got a legit agent. It was easier for me to get commercials versus legit, like play, film. Uh-huh. So I was always a little tough because people didn't always know quite what to do with me physically.
Okay.
Because I fall in between types. Like I was an ingenue, but I'm sort of a character actress. Pretty, but not pretty enough. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying? So I kind of like...
But wouldn't that add to one's versatility?
It does now, as I'm older. But exactly. Yeah. So now I love, like, now it's great to be a character actress. But then, you know, it's the whole thing.
So you had to be, here's a horrible word, typecast.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. And I think in the beginning, it's really important to know where you fit. Mm-hmm. Because people kind of want to know where
and
to put
you. And did
you? I did not. I didn't. I think I fought against it. I think that I wanted to be something maybe that I wasn't. Like, mm-hmm. I think I really wanted to be that leading lady. But I think I'm really quirky and I'm really funny. And I think when I was younger, if I pushed that, it would have gone a little differently for me. My mentor was Freddie Caraman. He's an amazing, amazing acting teacher. He passed away about 7 years ago. He was incredible. And I did a lot of work in class, so that really helped me to see that I was really quirky, and mm-hmm. I'm proud of it, and I love that stuff. I love playing people who are different or on the edge, or so now it's great.
In spite of the fact that you've gotten older.
Yes, because I am doing my own work now.
And that's relatively new for you.
Correct.
A lot of actresses dream to be able to call the shots or feel that they've got something to say. Was that the case for you before you got diagnosed with breast cancer? Were you working on your own endeavors?
I was starting to. And I never quite knew exactly what I wanted to write. I had started writing about dating in your mm-hmm. 40s mm-hmm. or, you know, being like Jewish and from Long Island and going to seminary. I started like dabbling, but when I got sick, something called me to write this.
And how old were you when you were first diagnosed?
I was in my early 40s. My mother died of breast cancer. I was 16 and she just turned 50.
So you have the BRCA gene?
I do not. So I do not have the gene. Mm-hmm. So I had to get mammograms earlier than most people, and we just had to be a little more careful. But I still never, ever thought, I mean, as I say in my show, I was like, you know, yoga, health nut, vegetarian.
Yeah.
I was like, no. I was like, this is never going to happen to me. I was just never worried about it. So I went for a routine mammogram.
In your early 40s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the radiologist came out and said, you need to come in. And whenever they say, come in and talk to us.
Yeah, it's, really.
It's, every woman goes white. It's never what you want to hear. And they said, we found calcifications on your left breast. Now, he said to me, it's probably nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Only 2% of the time, it's something. But given your history, I want you to go check this out.
And have a biopsy?
Go see a breast specialist and see. So I did that, thinking it's going to be absolutely nothing. And they did a biopsy, and it turned out to be DCIS, which is ductal carcinoma in situ. So some people consider it precancer, some people consider it cancer, but it's non-invasive and it doesn't spread beyond the milk ducts.
So it's not into the nodes.
Yeah, it's non-invasive. So that was in my left breast. So I had a lumpectomy, and then they called me in again. They said, we did not get clear margins. You have to have another lumpectomy. So I had two lumpectomies in my left breast. So because of that, I had to really get checked every 3 months. So I went and, I don't want to make people nervous saying this, I went and got a mammogram, all clear, everything mm-hmm. was fine. Mm-hmm. Now, I also have dense breasts. Women with dense breasts should get sonograms because they're harder to read on a mammogram. So I also got a sonogram. And something sort of showed up in the sonogram, but they weren't sure, and they said, get an MRI. So I got an MRI, and I ended up with cancer in my other breast.
So the MRI, what did it show in your left breast?
Left breast was fine.
Fine, but they found it's something in the right breast.
Cancer.
They found cancer.
So I'm a believer that DCIS saved my life because otherwise I wouldn't have gotten the MRI, I would have gotten the routine, and it would have been far along. I was really lucky. I was stage one. So that's when I found out I had cancer.
Talk about what that did to your world.
Well, what that did to my world. I mean, coming off of 9 months before having had two surgeries.
Separate and distinct from that.
Yeah, from the DCIS.
Right.
So I had the DCIS, and then I'm finding out 9 months later I have cancer in my other breast.
Right.
So it was just like, you know, I'll say one of the worst parts for me was the waiting to get my test results back, because that's where you feel, for me, you have absolutely no control whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So I remember, like, my boyfriend at the time, he's tried to distract me. He's like, I got to do everything I can. So he's like, let me take her shopping. And let's go to Woodbury Commons. That'll distract you. I was a mess because in my heart, I had a really bad feeling. And of course, all my friends are like, Amy, you're going to be fine. You're going to be, every person said to me, you're going to be fine. But I had this little part of me that was like, something feels wrong. I just got the chills. Something feels wrong. And
it's not that you were catastrophizing.
No, I'm not that way at all.
Yeah.
I'm not that kind of person at all. I just had a feeling. And my best girlfriend flew in from Florida, and she went with me to get my test results. And I'll never forget it. We're sitting in the office, and Dr. Hiotis came in, who I love. She's my breast surgeon, and she looked at me. Oh, I could cry just thinking about it. And she said, it is cancer. And I went into, I don't know what happened with me. My best girlfriend started crying, and I was like, stop crying. I said, we have things to get done. You were not allowed to cry. And I'm usually a crier.
It's amazing what you would, the reserves that you draw up. Yeah, don't analyze it.
Oh,
it just happened.
I was like, no. And I looked at her, and I said, I want a double mastectomy. Now, of course, my show is called Nice Tits. I had great boobs. So my girlfriend was like, what did you?
She's delirious.
Yeah. Like, there's no way. And I was like, no. I was like, I knew in my heart, again, just like I sort of knew something was wrong. I was like, I knew this is what I had to do.
But did you not feel that that was, or did other people say to you, for heaven's sake, Amy, this is knee jerk?
I think when you're the one with cancer, people sort of.
Back off?
Back up. Well, at least my group of people backed up a little bit. And people were really good. No one said to me, this is what I think you should do. People were really, because I was so clear. Now, I think some people might be like, oh, I'm not sure, I don't know. Something came to me, and literally, Sandy, the words just blurted out. Like, I don't even know where or how that happened. Part of me is like, I always believe my mom watches over me. It was that moment of my mom talking to me and saying, this is what you need to do.
Was it also maybe something that had to do with control on some level?
I had a feeling that I was a ticking time bomb. I'm pretty, you know, again, we'll go to the fact that I was in seminary and I've meditated for years and I'm in touch with
myself.
This
was all pre-cancer you're going
seminary into. Seminary was right before I got diagnosed.
Just happenstance?
Yeah, it's funny because the
That's
whole time I was—
very strange.
Exactly. The whole time I was there, Sandy, I was like, everyone's like, oh my God, I'm going to be a reverend. I can't wait to call myself a reverend. I'm like, no one is calling me a reverend. I said—
And meaning it.
Exactly. I was like, those words, I was like, no. I said, I'll quietly minister, but I do not want to be called that. And the whole time I was there, I was like, why am I here? I mean, fascinating courses, interesting things to learn.
Yeah, why? I want to not get away from what we're talking about, but riff on that a little bit more. What propelled you to do this?
Well, because I was in the middle of deciding if I still wanted to act or not. It's a hard business. And I felt like my reasons for being in the business.
Were they shifting?
I think it's a difficult business, and I'm in it for the art, and it just, if you can stay in it for the art, that's one thing, but it became about so many other things. And
that weren't there when you started off.
Well, that probably were always there, but that just started to bother me. That ego for me got involved, and it just became less about the work and more about having to grind and find a job. And
So it was hard.
It was really, you know, it was hard. I made the choice. It was hard. I'm glad I made every choice I made. So I was thinking of going to school and being like a psychologist or transpersonal psychology. So I just was like online exploring a ton of different options. And I came across this place, One Spirit Interfaith Seminary. And the classes were fascinating. It was like exploring Buddhism and all the different religions. And I was like, wow. I was like, this appeals to me. I was like, this really appeals to me. And it was actually in seminary that I realized that I wanted to act. I was like, that's my spiritual practice.
But you didn't always know that?
I did, but when I thought I was going to leave the business.
Right. So it only reinforced you.
Oh,
so that's really interesting. Because you went in with a different MO.
I did.
Oh.
And I came out saying, I want art to be my spiritual practice. So if that makes sense.
Okay.
To think of it, and I think of my show as a spiritual practice. And when we get talking about that and about the giving back part. So, but still the whole time I was there, I was like, what am I doing here? Why am I here?
So was this a life crisis for you?
Maybe, probably. Okay. But I think it was one of those life moments of, I think I may be ready for a change in my life.
Uh-huh.
And then a year later, I got cancer. And I know in my heart that being in that program helped me walk through getting cancer. Because I think what happens to a lot of people is they find that stuff after they're diagnosed. I was blessed to find it before.
Mm-hmm.
So I am never saying that walking through cancer is easy. I would never say that. But I had tools to help me. I had strong tools to help me.
So you knew on some level how to take care of yourself.
I did. Forget
the physical part of it, you know.
The emotional part.
Yes, the emotional
part.
I was going to say spiritual. I didn't want to.
Yeah.
But
no,
the emotional part.
Like, because before all my surgeries, I went to a hypnotherapist. I meditated. They have, I can't remember the exact name of the program, but it's like heal faster through surgery. I did that through NYU. Anything that I could to just help my system heal quicker and easier.
And you felt that you needed to do this beyond your circle of family and friends.
Yes.
If you know what I mean.
That
everybody says, oh, I have this really great support system. And
I found my people. I found what I needed to do. I did craniosacral therapy. I did everything I could to prepare myself before I went in for that surgery. So after Dr. Hiotis told me that I was diagnosed, she gave me a list. She said, here's some plastic surgeons I think are really going to be great for you. And the first one was Dr. Nolan Karp. And I never went to anyone else after that. As soon as I met him and saw the office, but as soon as, because the office is spectacular. But as soon as I met him and I was there, again, all instinct for me.
Yeah.
Like my instincts, and I think maybe that's something with seminary, maybe that's something with meditation. I have something with acting. I have really good instincts.
Okay.
I have really, really good instincts.
And it works.
So I think sometimes you just got to get quiet. And the person you have to, you just got to go in. And I loved Dr. Karp. And so 3 weeks later, I was going to have my surgery.
You were involved with this process for how long? From the moment that you had your surgery before you saw Dr. Karp. But, you know.
A year.
Of what? Of not working?
I did go on disability.
Mm-hmm.
I went on disability for 2 months. So I got the surgery. And, what a lot of people might not understand is having your breasts removed, it's amazing how much movement comes from here.
Huh.
So you can't lift your arms. I'm not kidding. Like, when I say in my show brushing my teeth was difficult, like, you can't lift your arms over your head. You do need help.
Was there a naivete to that for you? Like you had no idea?
I knew I was prepared. They let you
they
know.
They did.
That. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
They let you know that. And I'm like the Google queen. I researched everything. At times, my doctors were like,
enough
get
already.
Offline.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They go, stop.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when I spoke to a lot of women who had had the surgery, so I knew things like, sleeping. I'm not a back sleeper. Well, you know, you're going to have tissue expanders and you have the surgery. You have to become a back sleeper. So I learned to, someone said, get a husband pillow. Remember those pillows you used to bring to college, like the, with the two arms?
Yeah.
So I don't know why it's called a husband pillow.
No, I don't either.
I have no idea why you named that. So I had like the husband pillow and I'd prop different pillows up on my side. So I spoke to a lot of people that really helped me before.
Mm-hmm.
Because for me, because I was unable to get deep flap or tram flap, where they take the fat from either your stomach or
another
back,
part of your body,
and they make your boobs from that. I was too thin, so
there's a cross to bear. That wouldn't have, yeah, you know, you're damned if you do, isn't it?
I know. It's like, yeah, that's why I said in my show, can I gain weight and come back? He's like, absolutely not. So, so I had to get tissue expanders where they stretch, you know, they put a port above your chest. I am now feeling myself up as I'm sitting in the studio. They put a port and they fill it up with saline each week. So they stretch you. So you get stretched enough. It's painful.
Could you work?
I did not work. Some people could. I chose to.
I mean, if you're an accountant, I guess you could go.
Yeah, I wasn't good. You know, I told my agents and they were phenomenal and they kept it really quiet. I said, listen, I don't want to advertise this. at school, you know, I teach at the conservatory. Mm-hmm. They were great. And, you know, they're like, come back when you're ready to come back.
And, and that also precluded doing VO work, voiceover work?
I didn't want to come into the city. I left New York. Like, I had all my surgery here. Mm-hmm. And then I lived with my sister, who I'm really close to, in Westchester. Mm-hmm. So I would take a car service in every week to go to CARP to get myself expanded. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then I'd go back and be with my sister. I live in a fourth floor walk up. You know, I'm someone who like carries like 30 pounds of grocery. Like I knew that I couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And I'm blessed enough to have a family.
Right.
That's the part that makes me cry. Like that they just, you know, they come out and they support me.
They rose to the occasion.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they were like, they were extraordinary. And it ended up becoming like a bonding time for me and my sister and with her husband and my niece and I. My niece was 9 at the time.
And this was how long ago, which I never asked.
It'll be 8 years.
So what prompted you to share this?
I'm actually, it's really funny, I write a whole show about it, but I'm really a private person. So, you know, I'm coming back. So after my expanders, when I knew I was stretched enough, you have to wait a month until you can then get your implants. So I went back to work for that month. I came back to the city. I went back to work. You know, so I would go to auditions. I'd wear, you know, I usually wear low kind of tops. I wore really big clothing. I didn't tell people. People like, how are you? I'm like, oh, fine. What's up with you? And then when people start complaining about stupid stuff, I'm about to die because I'm like, oh, my God, mm-hmm. I'm going through mm-hmm. cancer and mm-hmm. you're complaining that mm-hmm. your train's late. So I just started writing when I was at my sister's. And I remember having dinner with my sister and her family and saying, I'm going to turn this into a show. They're like, okay. I was like, I don't know how it's going to happen, but I'm going to do it. So I wrote and wrote and wrote for a year. I just wrote about everything that I went through because I got to tell you, it probably took me 2 years for me to get all my strength back. I have a really sensitive system. So the anesthesia for me was very, very, very hard. I got incredibly ill. You know, I was in the hospital.
So the means to the end really sucked.
It did. Like, mm-hmm. I was like, you know, a lot of people are out of the, you know, because God love our insurance, are out of the hospital in 2 days. I was there for 5 mm-hmm. because I got very sick from the morphine. Mm-hmm. So I threw up, I told you, from 14 hours from that. Then they couldn't find a painkiller to give me. I kept having bad reactions to painkillers.
Did you ever doubt yourself to do this procedure?
No, I just, mm-hmm. no.
Because there are women who are celebrating the fact that they lost their breasts.
And I applaud them. And I say that this is such a personal choice. There is no one size fits all. Whatever anyone chooses to do for them is right.
Don't pass judgment on what I've decided to.
And people do pass judgment.
I bet they do.
They do. They do pass judgment. Like, why are your boobs so important to you? Or it's whatever's right for you. It's mm-hmm. your life, and mm-hmm. whatever works for you is what you should do. So I applaud those women who choose not to reconstruct.
But as I said, did you ever have that doubt in terms of the means to that end God, Amy.
No.
So you're writing all your thoughts down, and you're a comedic actress.
I am.
But when you were writing it, was it funny?
Well, some of it was funny because just of the ridiculous things that happened. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, because the day I met Dr. Karp, mm-hmm. this is in my show, it was the Million Man March. So it was like I couldn't get through and I couldn't get to the offices. And I say, like, I, you know, happened to be attracted to black men. It was all black men. And my girlfriend's like, Amy, you have a cancer appointment. This
right.
is like
stop
not a dating
for,
stuff.
Yeah, right.
I'm like, oh, look. You know, she's like, get moving. So I had said to Dr. Karp, I said, that was a great distraction. I said, can you come up with one on the day of my surgery? He goes, I'll do my best. Mm-hmm. So I'm a person, you know, I've gone through a lot of losing a mom at 16, I'm going to start crying again. It's not easy. I have not had the easiest life. Mm-hmm. For me, mm-hmm. humor is what gets me through. Mm-hmm. It is my coping mechanism.
Did you ever think of sharing that pain of your mother's death, although you were young at 16? Did any of these events strike that same chord with you that the double mastectomy did?
Not when I was 16. But now, it's interesting. Now, when we get talking about the fact that I want to do talkbacks and talk to people and use my show as sharing, I feel a very strong need to want to talk to young people who lose a parent.
But is that coming from your interfaith work or is that coming from your...
No, that's coming from... I'm pausing just because I feel really emotional. That's coming from the fact that I didn't feel like I ever had anyone to talk to. How do you process that?
I totally understand.
How do you process that? And my friends had no idea. And then people don't like to talk about it because everyone tends to, no offense to everyone, but people tend to take things to themselves. So they get afraid if they talk about it, it might happen to someone they love, or they think about what would happen if I lost my mother. Or...
So let's uplift us a little bit. Your show is layered. Because it's emotional. There are parts that are not funny. There are parts where you verbally take your clothes off. And you were prepared to go naked on that stage. What was that like when you had all these notes and then you said, I'm taking this on the road?
So I met with Peter Michael Marino, who's my director, and we worked probably for over a year on shaping it and getting it into play form. And then I've been workshopping it for the past like 2 or 3 years, tweaking and it's, I love doing my show because this is how I feel now. It's really no longer about my healing. I feel, you know, I feel healed. It's about being of service to other people and sharing my story so other people can then share theirs. So it's all about if I talk, and other people share with me. And that's been extraordinary for me.
What was it like that first time that you publicly performed?
Well, the first time I did it, I only did like a half hour of it just to see, do I have something here?
Right.
And invited like, you know, close friends and family. And people were like, you have got to
continue. So it was sort of workshopped a little?
Yes, correct. Correct. And then people like, you have, it's been workshopped a lot. And then people are like, you have to do this. And then the more I do it, people are like, wow, you really have to get it out there. So now the goal is to really get it out there.
And at the risk of stating the obvious, why did you call it Nice Tits?
Well, because originally I was going to call it Clear Margins, which is, you know, me.
That
and
stinks.
I was like, who? Yeah. I was like, who wants to see a show called Clear Margins? It's a great title. So it's really, it's Nice Tits. And then on my postcard, it says, Amy had a great rack, then she got cancer.
I guess I never saw that part.
Yeah, yeah. So, and some places like don't like me to, you know, they don't like to use Nice Tits just because.
Yeah, I would imagine that that would, you know, against you.
But then we
nice
just call
beep,
it.
Nice,
right. So it's like Nice Tits, the rack is back. Mm-hmm, so it.
And have you taken it on the road?
I have. I went to Theater Conspiracy in Florida, which was an incredible experience. And I met some wonderful people and became friends with wonderful people. I had this woman right after the show. She ran up to me and she's like, took her top off. And she's like, I want to show you my breasts. Because she had, you know, on the horse. You know, it's just, it's really, it's amazing. So the goal is really...
to take it on the road.
It is. It's really to take it on the road.
I'm with you in terms of... getting out there to younger people. That's sort of how I feel about this show because, I mean, this is like a woman's studies program in a sense that I'm doing.
Yes.
You know, I'm introducing women who, for the most part, you've never heard of, and isn't that the greatest thing? And from all different walks of life and with all different MOs. And yes, it's got to be this exposure.
Yes.
So where are we going in the future with this? Is it Nice Tits all the time?
Well, Nice Tits all the time sounds really good, but I don't know.
You can use that.
Nice Tits all the time. It's always Nice Tits. I have a lot of goals. If it could run like the way the Vagina Monologues went, that's my, you know, it's.
I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's good to have a place to say, wow, this is where I'd like to take it. But the Vagina Monologues did amazing. It had great off-Broadway run.
Is that doable?
For me?
If you look at it, and no pun intended, clinically, is that doable? Can you get this thing to have a 6-week run here or a 3-month run there or whatever? And if that is the case, would you like to do that?
I would love to do that.
To be an artist in residence somewhere.
I would love to do that. I would absolutely love
it. So is this pushing a big rock up a hill or no?
It is pushing a big rock up a hill. But I think it's like, again, I really believe, I have a lot of faith about this. Like something is pushing me along. Bigger than me.
Well, that seems to be a real connection for you as we've been talking. You know, that you know that you're on the right path.
100%. 100%. Because I think breasts are fascinating. And I think women's relationship to breasts are fascinating.
Well, they're certainly very fraught.
They are.
Don't you think?
And so one of the things that I hate to give away ideas on air, but
Whatever.
One of the things I want to do is a video series about talking to young women and women of all ages about their relationships to their breasts, because I think you need to really understand that to then, I have the chills again, to really then understand why it's so difficult to lose them. Like, as my doctor said, she thinks that breast cancer is one of the most personal of the cancers. It's our breasts. There's something about the loss of your breasts. So I think it's really important to, you know, women have all relationships. Their relationship with their breasts change after they become mothers, as we get older. I mean, so I want to explore that, and then I want to, you know, explore topics with men about it. I talked about that at the talk back because I think that if a man has a partner or anyone, you know, a lesbian couple has a partner, or if someone loses their breasts, who do they talk to about it? Mm-hmm. Who does the partner talk to about it?
But there also must be women who say to you, this is crazy,
yes,
Amy.
I mean,
you know, why are you defined by your breasts?
Absolutely.
It's a body part.
Absolutely.
Get over it, woman.
Absolutely. And I say that in my show. I have that line in my show. I said, here I am obsessing, because I talk about nipples and still wanting to get new nipples, mm-hmm. which is on my bucket list, saying, here I am obsessing over the size of my nipples when 7 years ago I was facing my mortality head on.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk about that. I know that. I know that in the scheme of life, that's not what's most important. I'm grateful for every second. I'm grateful that I'm here. That's
well,
what's
you'd
most
be a lousy interfaith minister if you didn't buy that.
If I didn't buy that. But you know, so every day is precious for me. But they're still my boobs.
Mm-hmm.
And if, you know, if it doesn't matter to someone, great. It does matter to me. And I think if you do studies and research, it's very hard. It's a part of your body. I don't care if feminine or not. It's a part of your body that you have to say goodbye to.
Was that more of an issue for you than the cancer spreading?
Yes. Well, I was very, very lucky because I didn't have chemo. I didn't have radiation. I can't talk about any of that. You
mm-hmm.
know, I turned down tamoxifen. I said no to that just because for my system, I knew it wasn't right. So, yeah. And then I'm not going to lie. Of course, maybe this is back to the Jewish part. Then I feel guilty sometimes. I'm like, well, can I really say I had cancer? I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm like,
mm-hmm.
well, you know, I didn't have chemo. I didn't have radiation. Yeah, I lost my breasts.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't sit in a room with you guys and mm-hmm. complain about it because, you know.
You have to do what you have to do for you. And the fact that when I saw your show, there was not a single available seat.
We turned probably 20 to 30 people away.
Well, there you go.
Which is like amazing. And the responses and people talk to me about it. People from all walks of life. It's incredible. I even had people come up to me and saying, I saw your show and I'm more grateful for my life. I had some woman come up to me this again. I don't want to cry. But this woman said to me, she said, I have hated my breasts my whole life. She said, I've had such a difficult relationship with my breasts. I'm no longer going to do that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like the post-it note when I wrote my show is to give people hope.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like my show is not just about cancer. It's really about the universal theme of hope that we're all going to get, you know, for me, it was cancer. We're all, you know, life can be hard. Life can be challenging. Life is filled with crap and beautiful stuff, but that we can make it through, that we have this resiliency and that we have this strength. I choose to make it through with humor. That's my way, you know? So my show is really about giving people hope. So I have people coming saying, I don't know anyone in my life who has had cancer, thank God, but they're still impacted by my show. So
mm-hmm.
it's really universal, you know?
I know that we've run out of time, and I think that if nothing else, what a great way to end by what you had to say. Perfect. Hey, it wasn't scripted. Amy Marks, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
And lots of luck with your show.
Oh, thank
I hope
you.
We're going to be seeing nice tits all over the place.
I hope so, too. Thank you.
Join us for another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein.